1. Introduction. We want to change the way you think about sound. If we wish to attempt this by grounding ourselves in classical high culture, we might begin with Richard Wagner's idea of the total artwork and establish this as a key musical source for understanding what today we call multimedia. We could claim that already at the end of Romanticism and at the dawn of the modern aesthetic, Wagner was marshaling multiple media in order to generate an immersive experience for the audience. Wagner's idea of the total artwork brought every aspect of a musical dramatic work under direct compositional control in order to give it its most complete performance. If we were to establish this as a key genealogical moment, such a linking would usefully provide a powerful resonance between contemporary remixed digital culture and early forms of musical showmanship. Indeed, the 2001 edited collection, Multimedia from Wagner to Virtual Reality, has implicitly made this argument, tying Wagner's idea about the total artwork to other aesthetic advancements in music, painting, theater, and film. Randall Packer and Ken Jordan, however, were interested in the advent of virtual reality. Our pathway here is different. We are interested in production and composition, not as the evocation of a virtual realm, but as the aesthetic and especially musical evocation of a world. Rather than see technology moving us toward notions of virtuality, we want to remain grounded in a concrete world regardless of possible fictionalized content. We want to know what worlds are evoked in sound, how melody, image, noise, beat, genre, fanfare, and band persona prepare a participating listener or user to experience a soundscape, a created world of sensual information. We argue that new media increasingly create these sensory experiences by marshaling a variety of technologies, not as a virtual world qua consensual hallucination, but through a sense of worlding that further collapses the distinction between real and virtual. From our vantage point, writing in 2005-2006, we see from the 1960s onward numerous examples of proto-multimedia, from the earliest attempts at multimedia with the technologies of the day to the hip happening, from poorly lit jam sessions to candle-lit slideshows accompanied by music, Andy Warhol and the Velvet Underground, to the Beatles' Sgt. Pepper. And whether or not we might want to claim some direct causal relation, some genetic link, Wagner's far-reaching ideas about total art, ideas we are transposing as proto-multimedia composition and presumption, suffuse great swaths of this work. The Beatles are particularly exemplary. They achieved unprecedented aesthetic and commercial success as they evolved from being uniquely skilled songwriters to orchestrators of multimedia keyed to music and lifestyle. They created characters in the Sgt. Pepper album, went on stage under pseudonyms in Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Heart Club Band, even moved into film, such as A Hard Day's Night, Help, and Yellow Submarine, which saw the Sgt. Pepper characters appear in animated form. When Wagner ranks of total art in the 19th century, he could not have imagined how far such ideas might go, how, with broadcast technology and The Ed Sullivan Show, stage makeup and garish costumes, a film and a brand, these ideas would help the Beatles become an aesthetic juggernaut, selling truckloads of albums and movie tickets, packing stadiums, and later, with John and Yoko, galvanizing the anti-war movement by proselytizing for peace. Nor could Wagner have imagined, a theme we will return to, the emergence of the new media forms artists would utilize to expand their musical vision beyond the bounds of what is just music. Such expansion speaks to the movement away from the singular cult of genius propagated by Wagner and his fellow romanticists and toward distributed forms of production. To replay our leitmotif, musicians have been at the forefront of the new media revolution, and as our brief example of the Beatles illustrates, and as we will show below with Jimi Hendrix, yes, Brian Eno, and the Flaming Lips, artists and musicians have been collaborating and mutually influencing each other, creating feedback loops and immersive media worlds for quite some time. Wagner's control over set design, lighting, and costuming as fulfilling and furthering the aesthetic reach of his music, compares favorably to the Beatles creating imaginary characters, selecting album cover art, collaborating on movie scripts and costume design, and producing films, also with the idea of fulfilling and furthering their aesthetic reach. Furthermore, there is a technological component to these extensions, dispersions, and feedback loops, a counterpoint that transforms the singular humanism Wagner brought to his conception of the total artwork. We thereby move from the cult of the virtuoso or romantic genius that holds apart the realm of art from the common and everyday to a postmodern, post-punk, remix, hip-hop culture that values and utilizes all sound that punctuate common experience and brings art back into the everyday. Such an approach transvalues, reuses, and repackages content, sound, styles, and more, while also scrambling our sense of borrowed and originary. Such a culture fosters the full emergence of the prosumer. This term, originally coined by Alvin Toffler in his 1980 book The Third Wave, but enjoying a resurgence, captures the emergence of practices that join together the formerly separate categories of consumer and producer. As we trace theoretically and historically some key moments in the evolution of musical sound, on the one hand we describe sound's networking with multimedia, whereby sound seeks to propagate its aesthetic world through alternate media forms, and on the other hand we trace the breakdown, akin to Barthes' distinction between writerly, readerly texts, of what it means to make something and what it means to use or enjoy it. It is our supposition that these two strands go together, and that it is no accident that they have evolved and co-adapted together as they have. Perhaps all this is to say that we have not yet sufficiently attended to the technological nature of our mediated world. While it is a commonplace that new technologies impact our understanding and practice of communication, we are still only beginning to appreciate how the advent and cross-pollination of multimedia forms transform our world and our sense of world. Perhaps all this is to say that we have not yet sufficiently attended to the technological nature of our mediated world. While it is a commonplace that new technologies impact our understanding and practice of communication, we are still only beginning to appreciate how the advent and cross-pollination of multiple media forms transform our world and our sense of world, the hundreds of books, scholarly and populist, notwithstanding. In looking to theorize, historicize, and bring into pedagogical practice sound itself, as the call for papers that inspired this essay asked, we find ourselves playing catch-up to innovations and techniques that have long been in the wind in the world of music. That, we suspect, is one of the largest, if unspoken, thoughts underpinning the call to bring sound into what has heretofore been almost exclusively a text-based field of inquiry and pedagogy. In other words, it is not simply a matter of the computer and other electronica making sound a greater cultural and scholarly concern, nor simply a matter of the integration of media forms, even if these factors are of tremendous import and ones with which we will engage. Rather, it is that the move to inquire into sound brings with it a necessary willingness to learn its techniques and aesthetics, which are quite different from those of text and image. And, insofar as sound has in fact been continually merged with other media forms, this complicates, or we might even say complexifies, even further what we mean by sound and extends the range and import of those techniques and aesthetics. This essay does not offer recipes for insertion into existing technology-rich composition curricula. It is a grounding assumption on our part that such recipes are of limited utility. Rather, we are asking readers to reflect on how they think about and interact with music, rock and avant-garde music in particular, especially in terms of their experiences with the relationships among oral elements, music, sound, and noise. Such an approach that transforms how we conceive and in turn Presumably, how we hear and experience sound promises far more for composition, invention, and pedagogy. The essay traces the co-developing trajectories of technologies and techniques that define styles and development, and in hindsight, become music history. Our inspiration comes from our own idiosyncratic relationships to popular and not-so-popular musical expression, to relationships among bands, and from our understanding of and participation in communities of taste. As we have experienced, our students experiment with identities co-produced by fans and artists amid sounds, images, and communities. In this article, we have named this complexly interrelated matrix of community and identity formation, transformative technologies, and the practices it gives rise to, worlding. Worlding is key for understanding how new media and its technologies are differentiated from text and its technologies because it describes an entirely different way of experiencing production and reception, and we find that sound is, perhaps surprisingly, crucial for understanding worlding. End of part 1.